Every 6 weeks, I kind of go through looking at something that's gone on in the world. And I try to look at a world event this week and try to help us to, as Christians, kind of think about or kind of understand it. And there's kind of been a lot of different things. And I didn't want to talk about the German wings because, again, there just wasn't enough information to kind of go off. And I don't want to preach a message just kind of based on stuff. But to kind of shift moves a little bit. So there's a couple of kind of stuff that happened this week. And some of this news might be more important to you than others. But does anyone know who this fellow is? Mr. Malik. Yeah, that's right. Mr. Malik. I think his name's Zayn. Zayn. Do you guys know where? Do you know what he's famous for? He keeps traveling in a certain direction. You're right. That's right. He's very focused with his life, and he just spends his whole life just going in that one direction. Not anymore. Not anymore. Maybe that was his challenge. He wanted to get out of there. This is Zayn Malik. He broke the hearts of millions of advertisers and record producers over the world when he said that I am not going to be part of One Direction anymore. I'm quitting. I see a lot of blank faces there. I'm guessing that you are over 18 years old. So I thought, should I talk about that today? Should I talk about One Direction and you know Zayn Malik's strong decision to say, I'm not going to be part of this band anymore because the pressure is too great. So who else was really in the news this week, early on this week? This person, Jeremy Clarkson. All right, very happy man, very happy man. Jeremy Clarkson was also in the news this week because he got fired from some television program. What's it, what? How Clean Is Your House? No, what television show? Oh, Top Gear, Fifth Gear. No. From Top Gear, he got fired from Top Gear. Actually, he wasn't fired at first. He was said that he has been suspended for behavior detrimental to the BBC. And then all these people immediately online, bring back Clarkson. Clarkson was the best. I'm not paying my TV license anymore. All this stuff, and people got really upset. And then later they find out that because Jeremy Clarkson was really angry, shouted at someone, bullied them, and actually beat them up. And this is his producer. And they're like. And afterwards, the blogging Twitter sphere kind of doesn't know where to respond. So a lot of them are still like, still, he made Top Gear. We'll miss you. And it's like, okay, but he kind of beat someone up at his workplace who was his boss. That's kind of not really acceptable, right? So it's kind of a kind of difficult question. So I thought, well, should I talk about bullying? And should I talk about cars and the detriment of petrol-run vehicles to the environment? I said, well, let's not talk about that. So I thought, well, who else was I also thought that maybe the reason he left, if you haven't seen this, is maybe Jeremy Clarkson has decided to join One Direction. And if you ask me, it looks like a fit. It also looks like it could be a TV sitcom, like My Dad and My Four Sons. What's funny is it looks like he's wearing like a vest, and like he looks like that could be his real outfit. There's another picture. This is like the worst Photoshop job, by the way. I just took this off the internet. If I did it, it would look better. But there's another one where Jeremy Clarkson's head was on Zayn Malik's body, but then had like a huge sleeve tattoo, and I was like, well, everyone's gonna know that's not Jeremy Clarkson. So I decided not to talk about these two, and then something else kind of happened this week. No, Terry Pratchett was like last week. And I thought about that, but I thought, yeah, it's pretty niche. I mean, do people read nowadays? Anyways, just kidding. Just kidding. All right, sorry. Yeah, Kindle. I thought about this guy. So he was on, who's he? He also left One Direction this week. He was the one they always kept in the background. No one could see him. This is David Cameron. I can't believe I have to say who this is. But I'm sure you guys know. This is David Cameron. He started off this week by saying, I won't be in here for a third term. Okay, and it's funny because he's not even elected for the second term yet. And here he is saying, you know what, guys, I know. It's almost like, well, if you elect me for the second one, don't worry. I won't be back for the third one. I'll definitely hand over power by then. And then he had his, it's weird because it wasn't really a debate, but it was kind of like a group dialogue It's almost like a counseling session, I felt like, where they could kind of air out their concerns with Ed Miliband. And it was funny because depending on which newspaper you read, the winner of that debate was different. So I thought, well, maybe I'll talk about him because, it's kind of important for us as Christians to be thinking about the political sphere. But then I thought, well, maybe not. Well, let's talk about, since I was on the world leaders thing, so I'm going to talk about this guy. Do you guys know who he is? Barack Obama, or if you're a Republican, Barack Hussein Obama. So he's coming to the end of his term. So a lot of people are starting to already say, like, he's done nothing. We can't wait to get him out of the office. And there's a really big kind of political blockages that they're doing in the states to kind of prevent anything being passed. And it's controversial because Christians in the states are in a tricky spot. Because on one hand, they don't like some of the things he does. On the other hand, something he does are kind of biblical, like his policy on immigration, allowing people. But they don't know whether they're allowed to say it, these Christians, because there are a whole bunch of other Christians who are just so angry at Barack Obama. Their main goal is to find out whether he's really a Christian, and so they can add that to their list of things they don't like about him. But he's kind of had a rough year as things are kind of all over the place. So I thought, well, let's talk about him and talk about what his life is going to be, what his legacy is going to be. But actually, and then do you guys know who he is? He's not actually Singapore, but he is very close to Singapore. He is the former prime minister of Singapore, but actually, spoken from the near Singaporean, he is almost as Singapore as Singapore can be. This is Lee Kuan Yew. He was the first, the founder and the first prime minister of Singapore, and also the leader of the party, the main party, the 98% party of Singapore. And he was a... You have to admit he's a pretty tremendous guy to be able to establish Singapore, and a lot of the kind of values and perspectives that he brought really kind of drew out what it was. And he passed away this week, and it's pretty. You can have your controversy about what you believe his policies were like, but you have to say it's pretty amazing in this country where when he passed away, like almost the whole nation shows up to go and pay respects. And this is a big deal for a country that loves working, for them to kind of shut stuff down and to actually go out and see him. And actually the funeral procession is today, right? And it's probably finished or happening. It's probably take the whole day kind of thing. And he was largely influential, massively influential in the birth of Singapore and also for the Southeast Asian region altogether. I think everyone kind of looked to Singapore and tried to get ideas from them. It's interesting because you also get a lot of social media is really funny. So you get a lot of people from Singapore saying, oh, it's so, really heartbroken. And then they also add in, I hate the way the West is reporting on Lee Kuan Yew's passing. They don't understand actually how great he was. And because he was, I think in the West, we always complain about Singapore's human rights things. And that's the only thing they talk about. And then they talk about the chewing gum. But actually... all of these people that I've kind of listed, we're going to talk a little bit all about kind of what they're going. But I want to kind of start off with this quote by Lee Kuan Yew, and this is and as I was doing some research on Lee Kuan Yew, it was amazing kind of some quotes he comes out. And you can see why he's polarizing because he's one of those people who's very clear on what he wants and what he thinks things should be like. But this is what he said towards the end of his life when he was no longer active in politics. I'm no longer in active politics. It's irrelevant to me what young Singaporeans think of me. What they think of me after I'm dead and gone in one generation will be determined by researchers who do PhDs on me, right? So there will be a lot of revisionism as people revise Stalin, Brezhnev, and one day now Yeltsin, and later on Putin. I've lived long enough to know that you may be idealized in life and reviled after you're dead. And I thought, wow, this guy has a remarkable insight into life here on Earth and also legacy, or what we think our legacy will be or what we think people remember us by. And you would think with someone like him, you can also tell there's not a great deal of insecurity. He's not concerned about what people think about him. He's like, well, the truth of the matter is, and he's probably exactly right. People will write their PhDs on him. They will do research on him. But he's like, but I'm dead. And it's not going to matter what people think because they're going to do this. And people will adjust and write about history the way they see it from this kind of perspective. And today I want to kind of look at all these things. And when we look at Zayn Malik and we think about his decision to quit One Direction, it's like, well, he was part of probably what they would say the biggest band since the Beatles, or they might think they're bigger than the Beatles, only because they don't remember them. And they'll be like, well, doesn't he want his legacy to be more? This could have been the greatest band. I can't say that with any seriousness, but it could have been the biggest band forever. But instead, he's like, you know, I don't want to deal with this fame and this pressure anymore. I want to go out and live my life. We think of Jeremy Clarkson and his legacy. And it was really awkward in that letter the BBC wrote out because they're like, obviously, we had to let him go, but I don't want to take away from anything that he's brought to the BBC and to Top Gear. He's a great presenter, and he will always kind of be remembered. And it's kind of like, well, is that the kind of legacy that we're going to be left with Jeremy Clarkson? You think of David Cameron, who's already thinking about his legacy. And it was funny, because I was talking to Ben this week about politics, and he was... Ben, I hope you're okay with saying this, but he's blaming everything on Thatcher. We see some brotherly love there. But he basically, then we listed all the other politicians, and he said, what have they done? They've done nothing. They've done nothing. And it's all Thatcher. And the main point of this was David Cameron's legacy. Yeah, actually, what is his legacy going to be? How are people going to remember him? He will really be just like... a blip. And as I was trying to think of what David Cameron has done, I thought, it's really hard to tell. It's really hard to remember. Very different to even Tony Blair. You think of Barack Obama, and he's going to have a legacy, but he's totally going to be in that category where historians are going to revise and continue to revise and debate and argue with what his impact was. And you'll have one side that says, wow, well, he actually brought universal health care to the majority of Americans until the Republicans repealed it the next term. Or you have this idea, well, he's done this great stuff, or was it good? And then we come to Lee Kuan Yew, whose legacy will be, and I think one of the things he said was, I hope that everyone will know that I lived for Singapore, that is his legacy. That was his kind of thing that he left behind. But at the same time, he transferred that legacy. He was saying, well, it's not up to me to decide, it is for the future generations. Yeah, I was going to say rulers of Singapore, but that's not exactly correct. Not the right terminology. And I started to think about legacy. Actually, your legacy, my legacy, our legacy. How will we be remembered? So when you're younger, when we think about our futures or how will we be remembered, it's a little bit more romantic. It's a little bit more like, yeah, I'd love to be able to do this. I'd love to maybe invent something. I'd love to work on some project. I'd like to be someone who designed or built something really memorable, really, really something I'm proud of. But as you get older, these dreams that you had when you're youthful become a little bit more realistic. It's like I'd like to be old and not in pain. I hope my legacy is that, you know, I die peacefully. My kids are good. Or maybe, you know, I was faithful in my job. In fact, I think the older we get, the less we think about our legacy because the dreams that we had when we were younger aren't achievable anymore. But there's still this sense of like, well, how will we be remembered? This is something throughout history people are always thinking about. Actually, architects, they complain, are one of the most narcissistic people in the world because every building they build is sort of their testimony to themselves. Authors and writers, they're saying, there's so many poets talking about how can I live eternally? I can live eternally through the words of my poetry or my literature because I will be read from generation to generation. In other words, how will people look at us later? As you get older, you start realizing, well, actually, each of us, we are so small in the speck of time, in the speck of humanity. Like, what is our great impact? I was looking at some of these footballers, and obviously I'm a Liverpool supporter, and Steven Gerrard's last week had a very good game against Manchester United where he came on the pitch, and 58 seconds later, he stepped on someone. And after that game, everyone was saying, should this be the way we remember Steven Gerrard? Should this be his legacy? That in the last few games of Liverpool, he was just really rubbish. And then I thought some more. I thought, well, actually, you know, footballers, we make such a big deal out of them. But actually, the next season comes eventually. They're also just a distant memory. Maybe legacy or how we're remembered isn't as important as we think it is. Maybe somehow life isn't all about us or what we can do. Steve Jobs was really famous because he said, I want to make a dent in the universe. In other words, I want to do something so profound that it leaves a mark in the universe. And they say afterwards, yes, well, he fathered the Macintosh, the personal computer era, and the iPod, and all these things. But I thought, yeah, but that's not a dent in the universe. In 100 years, you might not be remembered at all. In other words, your legacy or how great you think you are, maybe that's not the main purpose of things. So then what is kind of the point of things? There's this verse in Romans 14, and this is the kind of verse that really challenges us the way we think about life or the way we think about what we're here for. And it says, for we will all stand before God's judgment seat, and it is written, as surely as I live, says the Lord, every knee will bow before me, every tongue will acknowledge God. So then each of us will give an account of ourselves to God. I don't like reading these verses because they're scary. It reminds you that at some point you are going to come face to face with God and give an account of your life. And when I look at that, I'm thinking, well, yeah, actually, when I get to heaven, is God going to say, what is the legacy that you left on earth? It seems almost like God is not that concerned with the legacy that you left on earth, because when he talks to you, there's some part of being in the present, tell me about your life, your journey, where your journey has come. Tell me your story. Give me an account of your life. And in that, I will hear you and I will judge you. This is the worst viva anyone could ever have, because you're standing in front of the person who knows absolutely everything. And you're not giving your piece of research or your studies, but you're giving your life, and you're saying, well, this is what I've done. This is how I've lived my life. When we start thinking about standing in front of God and the judgment that we're going to face before him, it's not about legacy or what we leave here on earth. It's about the life that we've lived and God's relationship with that. It gets slightly more intense in Revelation, actually, when you're standing there. And it says in Revelation, and this is, if you know about the book of Revelation, this is John, one of Jesus' disciples, and he was exiled onto this island of Patmos. And he was there, and he was having this vision. And God basically said, look, I want you to write everything you see in this vision. I want you to write and give it to the churches, because they're being persecuted. They're struggling. I want you to write this down, because I want to show you a little bit of heaven. I want to show you what it's like, and I want to show you about what's going to happen. And the reason I'm showing you this is because I want you to know how awesome and powerful I am. And so John's sitting there, and he has his vision, and it's complete. Like, you get the sense that's 360 degrees. Things are happening all around. It's a multimedia experience. And he sits there, and he has his vision. And towards the end of this, as he writes it down, because things are happening all the time as it unfolds, Revelation 20, he says, and I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. And books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. Like that is convicting. You modern culture and modern storytelling has picked up on this, that somehow our deeds are written in this book of life. I think if you saw Bruce Almighty, there's this idea that God had this infinite filing cabinet, which seems very archaic to use filing cabinets. But then again, he used two stones to write his Ten Commandments, so who am I to judge? And this huge filing cabinet comes out, and he has to go through every kind of act that someone has done, all their life story. And when I see those scenes, I don't want to think about that, because I don't want to think about God knowing everything that I've done, everything that's going on in my heart, in my mind, throughout every moment of the day, because I'm afraid that when I stand there, I'm going to be so ashamed that I don't know, I'll just break down, right? But there's something that you see here is that there's actually all these people are dead. They're not alive in their human way anymore. And they're standing before God. And it says everything's judged according to the things, but they said there are some names written in the book of life. Now, it doesn't say that the things written down, they're good or bad or whatever, but these names were already written in the book of life. There's this idea that actually God, when you believe in him, saves you, takes your name, and writes it in this book of life. And you will be judged accordingly, but not about whether you're saved or whether you're righteous enough or good enough. In other words, it's not how good you are or how right you live here on earth that gets your name into that book of life. The only reason you get into that book of life is because Jesus is the judge. If you believe in him, if you say, well, actually, Jesus, you are my God. You are the only one who can write my name in that book of life, so please write it in there. He will do that. But the same part, then why does it say all these things are still going to be judged before you? Well, it has to do with your story here on earth. The way you lived, how you lived, who you lived for, what your priorities were, how you treated people. It goes on, it says, the sea gave up the dead that were in it, the death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them, and each person was judged according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire, and the lake of fire is a second death. Anyone whose name was not found written in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. It's one of those verses that you don't like to read about, because it's like, well, there will be an end. A tormenting kind of end. And it scares me sometimes because I'm like, God, well, what if I'm not good enough? What if I wasn't a good Christian? Will I still be safe? The amazing thing, again, is when a name is written in the book of life, Jesus has put it there. You don't have to be afraid of that. But at the same time, that idea of hell or second death, that is justice. Those are the people who didn't want God, who didn't want to trust in him, who didn't believe in him, who were only concerned maybe with their earthly legacy and never thought about the eternity of things. And God says, look, at the end of the day, you didn't want me. And I reached out to you. I told you who I was. I said, come and know my love, my mercy, my grace. Let me show you how to live this life. And you said, no. Am I supposed to force you to sign your name in this book, or am I supposed to just say, well, this is the consequence of it, because all of us are imperfect. See, the more I read these passages, the more I read these things, the more I realized, yeah, actually, God is concerned with our story, our here on earth life now. When we think of some of these politicians and some of these pop stars, I'm not judging their lives, but all the pundits and all the people talk about their legacy or what impact they made on society. And it's great. It's great to be able to make an impact on society. I mean, I love having an iPhone because it's great. But there is more to life, it seems, than that. See, it's not about our legacy, but it's about how God sees our lives. It is your story, your walk, your journey. How has that been shown and given to God? One of the things I struggle with as a Christian is sometimes I feel like it's always trying to avoid doing bad things. Is Christianity just about trying to avoid doing what's wrong? Trying to be a good person? Trying to make sure you don't get involved in bad stuff? And normally when we just say like drugs or murder. Say, well, we don't want to do that, so we'll just try to be on a good path. But see, actually, if you got to heaven and you said, God, look, I never killed anyone. And I never took drugs. Is that cool? Are we cool? It's funny because actually in the book of Matthew, there's a story. It's called the Parable of the Talents, where God gives these gifts or these talents. And they're not talents, actually money. It's equivalent to a large amount of money. And they're called talents. It coincides nicely with modern society because when we think of talents, we think of gifts or abilities. And he gives it to them. He says, okay, look, well, I'm going to go off for a while, and I want you to come back. Hopefully you guys have made a return on this. And the first two go out and do that, and they double what they're given. The last one comes and says, Master, I knew you were a hard man. I knew you were a tough guy. So I took what you gave me, I hid it in the ground. It's safe, safe. No one stole it. Good, it's all good. And the master looks at him and says, what were you thinking? You knew I was a tough man. Why didn't you invest it at least in the bank or do something? You know, you missed the point completely. You missed the point completely on life. In other words, that person was so afraid of failing, of making a mistake, of not getting it right, that he never lived to kind of trust, to give. These first two, though, they were like, well, look, we're going to try. We're going to do this. We're going to try and make it happen. We want to give. The difference is it's almost like living a life proactively of goodness, of mercy, of love, of justice, of all the things that God is true and believes is right. It's saying, God, I want to be active in that life. I don't want to just stand in my own safe, comfortable, secure little place, because that's holding back. That's hiding myself in the ground because I'm scared. And God is saying, don't be scared of anything. Go. Live. Love. Bless. Wrestle with the tough things in life, but you've got to live life. That is the story. There's something different if you go then at the end of your life and you say, God, this is my story, and look, I struggled. I struggled, but I wanted to bless people. And these were the times where, you know, actually I fell short. I didn't do it right. But then I came back and I said, I'm sorry, and we tried it a different way, and it was great, and I love this. And I met with you that time when I was feeding those homeless people, and I felt blessed. Or there's that time when someone needed a lift, and I just gave them one. It was a small thing. Or actually, maybe there were those times when I was just nice to my sibling or my parents, or I was there with my family. Or I just actually spent some time praying for someone in need. And I tried. Do you think God would say, yeah, but I noticed that here, you smoked pot once in your life. So, nope, not happy with you. It's different because you would already be immediately convicted, yeah, actually, I didn't want to do those wrong things, but at the same time, I yearn for you to be more like you. The story and life with God is not one about fear and being afraid of doing the wrong thing. It's about pursuing the amazing possibility and opportunity to be like Christ, to be involved in healing and blessing people, to hunger for those who are lost or poor, for those who are suffering injustice, for those people who are, you know, neglected, marginalized in society. That's where we should be. And it's like every time this rumbling keeps stirring up into me, it's like, this is, yeah, that's what we should be thinking about. Now, because we're very binary people, we always think, well, what does that mean, Bert? Does that mean we should just sell all our possessions then and go out into the wilderness? What do you mean? I don't know. I can only do all or nothing. I can't somehow. See, that's, again, that's losing sight of what God's done. God has actually blessed you with everything you have now. It's like this. Let's say God gave you the gift of playing a musical instrument. You say, well, God wants me to give everything. I'd chop off my hands. Chop off my hands. There's no point having hands. I should suffer like everyone else, and then I can know that love. It doesn't make any sense, does it? If God has given you blessings, the idea is then you bless other people outwards. Don't just keep it for yourself. If you've got finances, you say, actually, God, how can I give so that it's to the point where actually it's uncomfortable for me? But I want to trust in you so that I can bless people. I'm telling you, I don't know how to do this because I wrestle so much with it being in the West where I want to be comfortable. But I'm asking God, make me more like you. Jesus, make me more like you. Make me uncomfortable with things that you're uncomfortable with. God, give me more opportunities to be loving and gracious. And if I make mistakes, I'm sorry, but God, I want to try. I want to move forward. I don't want to settle. See, I realize the difference between thinking about your legacy and thinking about your story that you're going to tell to God. If you're thinking about your legacy, it means this is your home. Legacy is what you leave behind to your descendants. If this is your home, if your legacy is what you've done, you're saying, well, I want this to be my legacy. But if you're concerned with your story, it's because you know that one day you're going to stand before God. And to say, God, I want my story. When I go to you, I want to say, God, my story is this. I loved you. You know, I wanted my life to shine out about you. I wanted to try things to let people know who you are, how great you are. I wanted to be so radically loving and gracious that people would be convicted and say, like, wow, who is this person? Why do they live like this? Legacy is about yourself. But when you think about your story or his story, it's what God is doing through you and the life he's given. Kind of to hammer this point home, I'm going to show you this video, and I'll be honest with you. I watched this, the first time I watched this video, I just cried uncontrollably. One of those bawling out moments, and I just couldn't stop, and I was like, oh, I better watch this a few times, otherwise I'll be crying on Sunday. So I watched it again, and I cried again. I was like, oh no. So I'm just gonna roll this, and it talks a little bit about what's happening in the Middle East with those places that have been currently under control or of ISIS and things like that. So let me roll this video.
It is not just the time for forgiveness. It is not the time for words. It is the time for work. I ask my Lord to not lose this opportunity. One time they blew up my church. One time they attacked me. I was during the mass by five missiles. One time I got shot in my leg. Still the bullets in my leg, the left. And I've been kidnapped for 9 days. And almost they broke my teeth, my nose. And they use all that by Allah's name. I have to forgive them. Not because I have, because it's order. But we have to forgive, because to let the grace transfer from generation to generation. If not, that means the pain and the hate will close the way to the grace of God. So still in this country, as a Christian, we're still like salt and light. Doesn't matter what happened to me or to my people in my generation. But we have to take care about kids. They are the future. If we will not take care about kids, our kids now, the next generation of ISIS, they will be from our side.
We've heard stories here of just horrific stories of one little boy that his whole family was shot except him. And kids showing up in bare feet. And one young girl here today that lost her whole family. So at this time, we really need to absolutely show that God is a God of love.
We're living a difficult time, you know. And now we are in winter. with running and cold. Many people still now is in the tents. But we thank God for many Christians to coming and help us, like you, Samaritan groups, with blacked and heaters and jacket. With your support, we can going on.
So each jacket were fitting to these children to be as snug and warm as possible. Hundreds of these children had the clothes on their back, and they're not ready for this harsh winter. So like this little man right now, be able to get his own jacket, one that'll fit him, one that'll fit him perfectly. You? You like a jacket? Yeah. Yeah, put your... And the children that are big, we're making them big so they can wear coats underneath it as the only clothes they have. Can you get back there?
از بیشم وان با مچلی کانی نه از گلکه بخوش.
You know, everyone we come across has a story. Their homes are gone. Their history, their lives, their tradition are gone. And so we don't run away from this trouble. We go to it and we bring the love of Christ to people, meeting their physical needs, meeting their spiritual needs, and say, like, you know, here, we as the church are standing with you and we're able to help your people.
I believe that one day, the next generation, they will forget who persecute us, but we never forget the people who stand and help us. They say, Father, what do you need? I say, generator. And just like this, generator was here. I say, okay, why I didn't ask another thing? Let's see just behind me, the new tents there. That one is held for 4 years and very strong, very expensive. That's by Samaritan Paris. And each one there is two family. You know, the minimum of what we are doing here is the minimum of our duty. We are not doing that as a favor to the people, because as a Christian, this is our job. We are proud because we are Iraqi people, but Iraq is not proud because we are part of it. We are dying here. Save my people. That's all.
I think that the video gets to me because that little boy is like Oscar's age. I just think, oh, what's that like? When we look at kind of what Samaritan's Purse and their desire to go out there, you have a sense of like, you know, we have so much blessing here. Like that little girl, she's like, well, I love this jacket because it's given to me. And I just thought to myself, it's not exactly the most fashionable. But she doesn't care. And I compare that with myself or the things I think about. And I realize, you know, God, actually, when I come to you and you say, oh, you know, Bert, what'd you ever do with all that blessing? I gave you all that money or that life. How'd you spend it? What's your story of me that you're going to tell? Will it just be me end up talking about myself and the things that I did for myself? Or will it be a story of God, my life was your story? Isn't that what it means to be an ambassador? For your life to be someone else's story. The reason we live like this is all because of Jesus. He was very different to the kind of leaders that we have in this modern day and age. Full of humility, full of graciousness. You know, the maligned or evil people of the world liked to hang out with him because they knew that he was true, that he was right, and they wanted whatever he had. And this Sunday is Palm Sunday. And this is a day where actually Jesus goes into Jerusalem knowing that he's going to die. And he rides in on this donkey, kind of fulfilling this prophecy. And at that time, people didn't realize that this is a prophecy coming out of the Old Testament. But they were singing and saying, oh yeah, Hosanna, this is going to be, he's going to be the new victor. He's going to overthrow the Roman Empire. And they put these palm branches, and he rode into the thing. And he goes in there, in John chapter 12, he actually says, and I've got a few verses here, but it starts off in 23, where Jesus replied, "Now the time has come for the Son of Man to enter into his glory." And when he says that, the disciples, they're all probably thinking, yeah, now's the time. You're going to establish your legacy here on earth. You're going to set up a kingdom. But when Jesus is saying about his glory, he's saying, I'm going to give up my life here on earth for you guys. I'm going to die. The ultimate act of sacrifice, of humility, exchanging his life for ours. He says, "I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat is planted in the soil and dies, it remains alone, but its death will produce many new kernels, a plentiful harvest of new lives. Those who love their life in this world will lose it. Those who care nothing for their life in this world will keep it for eternity. Anyone who wants to serve me must follow me, because my servants must be where I am, and the Father will honor anyone who serves me." It's where Jesus is saying, look, if you're living life here on earth to save yourself, you're always going to come up empty. But if you're willing to give it up and trust me, there is going to be life to be had. I'll just read a little bit on, because it's really inspiring. In 27, Jesus actually says, "Now my soul is deeply troubled. Should I pray, Father, save me from this hour? But this is the very reason I came. Father, bring glory to your name." And then a voice spoke from heaven saying, "I have already brought glory to my name, and I will do so again." When the crowd heard the voice, some thought it was thunder, while others declared an angel had spoken to him. But we know that it was God himself saying, "This is glorious." When you stand before God, what will your story be? You know, our theme this year is act justly, love mercy, walk humbly with God, coming from Micah 6:8. And then that kind of summarizes a little bit of what it means to walk with God. And it's the kind of active life. And then the question is, when you get to heaven, you say, "God, actually, yeah, you know, actually, I acted justly. I tried to stand up for what was right. I tried to be a voice to those who are suffering injustices. When I saw something wrong that was going on that was harming people, I spoke up. I didn't keep myself quiet. Did I love mercy? Was I full of loving kindness to people, or did I walk around judging them all the time? Did I walk humbly with God? Were you always at the forefront of my life? Were you the main one?" And the second thing is the thing which is at the heart of what the BC is about: love God and love your neighbor. When I get to heaven, will I say, "You know, God, I loved you, and I love my neighbor"? It's an amazing return, actually, when you give your life to God. And the more you give him, the more things kind of change. If you don't know, I was born in America, grew up there, and I never thought I would leave that country. And I had this kind of comfortable life. But when God called me out here, I didn't know what I was doing. But in the time that I've been here, God has opened my eyes and brought me into an amazing set of new experiences I never thought would have been possible. And every time I go back to the States, I try to explain what my life is like here, and no one gets it, no one understands, because they still see me the same way. But for me, it's like, God, I've experienced so much with you. It is such a joy and a privilege to be with him. But I know for myself, I'm still holding back from God. I could be giving more. I could be trusting him with more things. Except I've started to get comfortable with what I want. The challenge for all of us is to keep being willing to die to yourself so that you can gain and know that greater love of God. And for all of us, it's a different path. I can't tell one person to give up this and another person to give up that. It's about saying, God, actually, I just want more of you. So speak to my heart and let me know, so that my story on earth can be your story. Let's pray. As we come before God, and as we come to a time of worship and responding to him, I really want you guys to really seek and ask God now, God, actually, what is it in my life that you want? If you want to begin your journey with him, then you just say, God, actually, I want to start. I want my life to be your story. I want to surrender this all to you. Let's pray. Father, you are amazing, and we thank you so much for giving your son, Jesus Christ, to die on that cross to save us. We thank you that Jesus is this perfect example of humility and of grace and of love. And as we are challenged and convicted in that, God, let us yearn for Christ-likeness, to be ever more like you, to let our lives constantly be reflecting who you are, holding nothing back. So Jesus, on this Palm Sunday, when you headed into Jerusalem for your last week, and then eventually on that road to Calvary, to that cross where you laid down your life for us, Lord, let us take our own journey to say that, God, we want to lay down our life, our comfortable living, and give it to you. We thank you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Let's come to worship. If you'd like to receive prayer, if something's going on in your heart and been stirred,